This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Welcome back to the Financial Sense News Hour. Jim Poplava, John Loeffler here with you. You know, surprise, surprise, you may or may not have heard about it, but Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell testified before Congress, but another surprise, surprise, no one noticed other than the markets. You know, usually when a Fed chair testifies, it's front page news and everybody's watching and hanging on everything he or she says. But not this week, because the media maelstrom in a frothy frenzy occupied the news channels over the Trump-Putin summit. There seemed to be talk of absolutely nothing else. And what was even funnier about the whole thing about the Putin-Trump summit, it wasn't about what President Putin and President Trump had discussed. It was about the press conference afterward. Nobody still knows really what they talked about in depth or what they reached, but there was talk of nothing else. What the Fed said or what was happening in corporate earnings this week went largely ignored. Let's run some clips here that give us a summary of the Fed chair's statements.
The economic outlook remains strong. While many factors shape the economic outlook, some of the headwinds the U.S. economy faced in previous years have turned into tailwinds. In particular, fiscal policy has become more stimulative, and foreign demand for U.S. exports is on a firmer trajectory. What we've seen is incoming data that suggests a strengthening in the economy. We've seen continuing strength in the labor market. We've seen some data that will, in my case, add some confidence to my view that inflation is moving up to target. Gradually reducing monetary policy accommodation will sustain a strong labor market while fostering a return of inflation to 2%. Engaging the appropriate path for monetary policy over the next few years, the FOMC will continue to strike a balance between avoiding an overheated economy and bringing PCE price inflation to 2% on a sustained basis. My personal outlook for the economy has strengthened since December. And again, each member of the FOMC is going to be writing down a new set of projections and a new estimate of appropriate monetary policy as we go into the March meeting, which begins 3 weeks from today. And so I wouldn't want to prejudge that new set of projections, but we'll be taking into account everything that's happened since December. Flattening of yield curves in the past has been a sort of a precursor of recessions, but largely because in many prior recessions, Fed had to raise rates quickly to hold inflation down. That's not the situation we have now. It's very typical for the yield curve to flatten as short-term rates come up, as the economy strengthens. And I don't see a particularly large. There's always a risk of a recession at any given point in time. I don't see it as at all high at the moment. In the committee's view, further gradual increases in the federal funds rate will best promote attainment of both of our objectives.
So in summary, we can hear that the Fed chair was optimistic. He didn't see any threats on the horizon and actually seemed to suggest that all systems were a go for their future rate hikes. There was no mention of problems in the emerging markets or that raising rates could present any kind of a risk. The only risk that he seemed to identify at this time was an escalation of trade tensions.
And as the Fed was implying in that testimony, John, the Fed futures market has inched, well, actually down a notch as of this week. The probability of a September rate hike has drifted down from 88% on Wednesday to around 85%. So they were taking some of the things Powell was saying as somewhat dovish. So there's still a high probability of another rate hike coming this September. And here's the important one. The fourth rate hike in December still remains on the table. Right now, the futures market pegs that somewhere around 52%, but that has also come down from 58% last week. At this point, it looks like at least a minimum of 3 rate hikes and possibly 4. That fourth one could still be in question. It's about a 50-50. But even that has come down somewhat to around 51.6%. So the Fed is talking about 2 more rate hikes. And of course, it got the president's attention with some tweets basically saying, hey, I'm trying to keep this economy going. I'm in the middle of trade negotiations. And you guys are talking about raising 2 more times? What are you thinking? And of course, Fed governor immediately came out in response to the tweet. He said, hey, we're independent. We're going to do what we think is best.
So it really seems that the Fed is on course to raise again. There's been no change right there. But There also seems to be a hint that they might just slow things down. And at least if we look at what the markets are doing, look at futures probabilities, they're dropping down. So the market seems to be interpreting it that way, Jim.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, the Fed mentioned the thing that was really surprising, and it came out with a couple of the congressmen and senators asking about the flattening yield curve. But I think, the one thing is the spread, as we take a look at, and we talked about this with Craig Johnson in the first hour and, of course, Rob Bernard as well. But the spread between the 2 and the 10-year note has narrowed to less than 25 basis points. You know, you talk about another 2 hikes, one in September and a possibility one in December, and the yield curve could invert. I mean, the Fed is well aware the curve as a sign of an approaching recession. And that was one of the things that was brought up in the testimony. Well, yeah, we've heard that, but, you know, I don't think that's going to be the case. It's kind of like Bernanke saying back in 2007, I'm not worried about real estate. But I don't think that is a message they would want to telegraph at this point. Right now, as we covered on the program last week, the best thing going is the LEIs are signaling a strong record growth for Q2 and Q3. In fact, we're due to get, I think it's next week, we should get the first pass at the Q2 numbers. And they're probably, John, going to be in the upper 3%, maybe possibly as high as 4% for economic growth. But rate hikes always act with a lag. And that's one problem that the Fed has. They're always looking in the rearview mirror. So if you look at the financial markets this year, on the surface, things look pretty good until you look underneath the hood, as Craig Johnson and I were talking about in hour one. As we mentioned then, the S&P 500's 4% return this year, the bulk of that return has come from just 6 stocks, the FANG stocks plus Microsoft. The vast majority of stocks within the S&P 500 are down about 10% or more for the year. And the multiples on some of these stocks, like Amazon or Netflix, harken back almost to the tech bubble, 230 times for Amazon, 166 times for Netflix. Even Alphabet is selling at 50 times, and Microsoft is selling at 58 times earnings, almost back to its PE multiple high at the peak of the tech bubble in 2000. So the gains have been made by just a handful of stocks, with elevated PEs, if not extreme valuations. And the result of my thesis of the index bubble, which is driving these valuations and hiding the real risk underlying the market. The fact returns are concentrated in a handful of stocks, and a vast majority of stocks are down, are very indicative of a late stage bull market.
You know, it is amazing when you hear market commentary, how people or analysts can listen or view market events, and we can talk about anything, Fed testimony, examining charts, certain events that happen, and come out with totally different conclusions. It reminds you of a theological dispute, you know, or some kind of a philosophical dispute. Let's see how some of that type of thing works. Here's some clips from Bloomberg.
Fed Chair Jerome Powell back on Capitol Hill. John Eade, CEO of Argus Research. What was your reaction to Powell's week of testimony?
Well, Scott, I think we're all ready for higher rates, right? If there was any thought that he wouldn't continue the campaign, well, obviously that's out the window. And in fact, it might even be accelerated a little bit. You know, a lot will depend on what's happening with employment and overall GDP. But you know, it could be 4 instead of the 3 that everybody had been expecting prior to this testimony.
Markets declined on Tuesday when Powell spoke. Today, not much of a reaction. It seems like there were fewer market topics in today's testimony. Senator Elizabeth Warren asked him about Wells Fargo, not exactly a big market-moving topic. So maybe that's why there wasn't much of a reaction today.
Yeah, and I don't expect him to go too far off script, you know, early on in his first testimony to Congress. So I think he's going to be sticking to full employment and inflation and make that the focus.
But still, we can't ignore some of the market declines we've been seeing this week. Past 2 trading sessions, we had steep declines. Buying opportunities now, in your view, what do you think?
Yeah, we're seeing some of the babies thrown out with the bathwater. And some of the stocks that we really like, particularly in the consumer sector, have taken a hard hit.
And let's pull one more view here, the impact on the market. This is a good clip.
Well, what typically happens is you get a sharp decline in a correction, and we certainly got that, almost 12% on an intraday basis over 9 days. And usually you get kind of a V-shaped bottom, and the move up is about as sharp as the move down. And then you kind of hit resistance. Often it's 50, 75% retracement of the move from the high to the low. And that's kind of where we are. We hit the 50-day moving average. And at this point, the market, if history is any guide, should start to run into a bit of a wall and kind of range trade for some, perhaps even a few months. And then whether it retests the lows or not, who knows, of course. But normally you get the V and then you get sort of the chop. And I suspect we're going to be in the chop now for a while, especially as the Fed seems to be hinting that it's going to be moving the goalposts in terms of what the market has been pricing in for the Fed.
What is your take in terms of Jay Powell's testimony yesterday? Do you think we're now set for 4 hikes this year?
The way I look at it is more how many hikes over the next 2 years, whether there's 3 in 18 or 4. It's important, but it's not the most important thing. But really, what is the whole cycle going to look like? How many hikes will there be for the entire cycle? Where will the Fed end up in terms of the terminal rate, if you will? And, it's ironic because last August, the market was completely, I believe, on the wrong foot, pricing in only one more rate hike for the next 2 years. One hike as of last August. And now the market has really caught up, pricing in 5 hikes for the next 2 years, which is still shy of the Fed's sort of 6 hikes that is suggested by the dot plot. And so just as the market reprices itself, the Fed's sort of hinting at moving the goalposts. And, so I think 4 is entirely plausible for 18. But again, it's how many there are in total. And if you add up the ones that we've already had, which is 5 hikes, and the 6 more that have been signaled, you're at 11 hikes for the entire Fed cycle. And, the market is not far off from that. So if we remain in that general ballpark, I think we'll be okay.
So at this point, as we're reading what's going on out there, nobody seems overly concerned, despite the narrowing of the yield curve, as guests have mentioned here on the program, or the Federal Reserve planning on raising rates continuously. However, the gains in stocks, if we look at them, have been focused largely on the large cap stocks like Amazon, Google, Netflix. So what are the possibilities that despite these rate hikes, the economy and the markets continue puttering along for another year or more? I think that is the critical question that we have to look at, because some experts on the show and also on the FS Insider channel this week think that there are no signs of trouble until 2020. And guess what? That's a presidential election year. And as things started to emerge then, that could begin to produce some kind of earthquakes in the political process, not just in the market process.
Well, at least on this side, John, there's some good news, at least in the short run for 2019. An underlying story here, despite the deterioration of the vast majority of stocks, is the biggest part of the government stimulus package hasn't even hit yet. It is estimated that this year that stimulus will come out to be roughly about $270 billion. I'm rounding these numbers off. But the biggest part of the stimulus hits in 2019. It's about $500 billion. That will hit the economy next year, almost $200 billion more than this year. And that is enough money to keep this economy going. On top of that, you have stock buybacks that are coming as a result of the lowering of that special tax rate if companies, let's say, patriated their funds back to the U.S. A lot of that cash is going into M&A activity, which is at levels we have never actually seen before. The record prior to this year was $1.8 trillion in deals done in the year 2000. It got up to about $1.6 trillion in 2007. It's $2 trillion as of the first half of this year, and we still have another 4 or 5 months to go. So it exceeds records in the past. So as long as the economy keeps humming, at least in the U.S., you can still see some positive returns.
So if we had to look at it, what would it take to turn things around in the markets? Some kind of a catalyst which would drive stocks higher other than what we're seeing, which is money flowing into index funds or the FANG stocks.
You know, John, I suspect as we get closer into the fall that some of these trade negotiations are probably going to come to conclusion. He's not going to want gyrating markets or a loss in confidence as we get closer to the fall elections, because they'll be used against the Republican Party. Economic growth, tax cuts will continue to drive earnings higher, but as interest rates rise, PE multiples will be coming down. So stock selection is probably going to become more important as you approach the end of a business cycle. At least for now, things look good until the end of the year, and there are finally alternatives to stocks. And I would say that's probably the big change that we've seen as a result of these rising rates, because if you were to go back 2 years ago, there was a phrase they would use out there called TINA. There is no alternative. Well, there's actually now alternatives to stocks. So you look in the corporate debt sector, you know, we're getting 5% and 6% returns and interest rate floaters on corporate bonds. If you look at short-term sovereigns, you can get close to 3%. So the debt space is giving you yields that are very, very competitive, if not better than what you can get in the vast majority of stocks. I also think there's still a lot of bargains to be had in the energy space where earnings are accelerating. We had Schlumberger reporting earnings on Friday. They beat estimates as more money is being spent, more drill rigs are being put into production. And I also believe the momentum trade here at risk. At some point, somebody's going to, you know, we saw this probably in the first part of the market recovery coming out of 2009, you have these frequent market rotations we used to see. It would be risk on, risk off. And what has been, you know, if you take a look at what has been beaten up, there are a lot of stocks, high quality companies out there that are down 30, 40, 50, and as much as 60% that have attractive dividend yields and offer you a margin of safety. I mean, if you look at stocks that are already down 30 to 60%, you know, obviously there's going to be less risk there than buying a momentum stock like Netflix or an Amazon. And at this point in the business cycle, I would be thinking about risk avoidance. No one sees the storms coming until it's too late. So de-risking the portfolio is something you do before the storm arrives, not after.
So, Jim, if you had to monitor just a few things right now, what would you advise investors for either A, an investment opportunity, or an approaching risk?
You know, if you look back historically at recessions over the last 70 years, there's two common threads that really stand out. Well, actually three, if you think about it. And they've all preceded these recessions, these events. And they are rising interest rates, which come with the Fed rate raising cycle, and rising oil prices. And right now, John, we have both occurring simultaneously. If you look at West Texas WTI or Brent, they've gone up parabolically since last summer. WTI, it's hard to believe that last summer it was at 42. Here on this Friday, it's close to 70. And if you want to take a look at Brent, it was down to 44, and now it's in the mid and upper 70s. So, and if you want to look at interest rates, where they are, and this is probably where some of the good news is for individual savers and investors. Last year, the yield on a 2-year treasury note was 1.25%. Today, it's 2.6% and climbing. So you now have a combination of factors: rising rates, rising oil prices. What we haven't seen yet is rising credit spreads, which would be the third factor outside of what we're seeing going on in emerging markets. But when trouble starts, it will surface first in the bond market. It did that in 2000, and it did it in late 2006 and 2007 when credit spreads blew out. It also happened again in late 2015 and the first part of 2016, where we saw the stock market drop every single week for the first 6 weeks of the year. The other factor that goes along with it is widening credit default swaps. So when people think things are starting to get risky, when credit spreads start to widen, credit default swaps, which are insurance, they also, those premiums start to rise as well. But there are two elements that are holding up this market right now. An incredible amount of stimulus is still in the pipeline. As I mentioned, almost $500 billion going into the economy next year. In addition, even though interest rates are still rising, they're still low by historical standards. I mean, the Fed funds rate got up to over 5%. In the last Fed rate raising cycle, we're only at 2%, probably going up to maybe 2.5% by the end of the year. So the only difference between now and, let's say, going back to 2007 and 2008 is globally, there is a lot more debt, especially in the emerging market world. So it is still possible that you could see a crisis growing overseas, eventually hit our own shores. But right now, we remain the best house in a global neighborhood.
So as a result of this week's testimony, I think we can assume safely that the Fed is going to be raising rates further, possibility of a third rate hike in September and a fourth one in December. And we also expect oil prices to rise further, which has a depressing effect on the economy. But from an investment standpoint, what should investors be doing in this type of an environment?
You know, they should be doing as a lot of our experts have been saying here on the program, and a theme that we've been driving. You need to start thinking about de-risking. How much risk you're taking if you are fully invested in stocks or you're all in index funds. You now have attractive alternatives to just stocks. You didn't have that if we went back, let's say, a year ago. And that's where some of the good news is. We're looking at bond yields that range anywhere from 3 to 5 to 6% in our safe. And if you're invested in stocks, at least look at two sectors that are indicative of a late cycle, which is energy. And you might want to look at some of these high dividend paying stocks that are out there. I'm talking about these blue chips. You can look in the top 100 stocks in the S&P. You can look at the Dow stocks, many of them still offering attractive dividends. Or you can look at what we call the dividend aristocrats. These are companies that have had a history of raising dividends for 25 years or more.
Yeah, and what about gold here, Jim? Because sometimes this factors in this kind of an environment.
You know, one of the things, and this goes back to something that Craig Johnson mentioned in the first hour, there just isn't a lot of fear out there. I mean, the global economy, we're experiencing synchronized growth, although we're seeing it slow down overseas, but it's not looking good here. And it's attractive. It's becoming more attractive as the price falls, but technically it's breaking down right now. Now, if you're a long-term investor, and if you're buying gold that you want to sit on it, you want to hold, that's one of the things that we covered with Dave Morgan last week. A lot of people that buy gold, John, they don't trade them like Wall Street likes people to see trade stocks. They buy it, they put it away, they put it in a safe place, a vault, bank deposit box, and they sit on it. So if you are taking a longer-term view, you're a little bit more patient, you might want to try dollar-cost averaging into your bullion position. You know, it's something that I've been doing over the last 6 months or so. These prices become more attractive. And that's the thing, that you're really going to need a catalyst for gold, and you've got to have that fear factor come in the market. And right now, there just simply isn't any fear. So gold is a long-term investment. It just isn't timely.
Coming up next, opposing forces, the Fed versus President Trump. The government's trying to stimulate the economy. The Fed is putting a brake on it, working in opposite directions. That's coming up next as the big picture continues here on the Financial Sense NewsHour at financialsense.com.
You're listening to the Financial Sense NewsHour at financialsense.com.
You know, Financial Sense NewsHour listeners should remember that our premium members are able to hear the weekday Financial Sense NewsHour, featuring interviews with top economic commentators and experts. If you're not a member, here's one of the interviews you missed this week.
We still expect we're going to be in a bull market probably until the 2020s. We're expecting a 20 to 30% correction to start by next year, but we see that as only being a 20 to 30% correction followed by another multi-year rally, which will take us to the final top we expect somewhere around the mid-2020s. Now, but once that final top hits, that's going to usher in economic malaise that would be akin to the Great Depression.
And welcome back to the Big Picture, second part of the Big Picture and the Financial Sense NewsHour. Jim Poplava, John Loeffler here with you.
And this segment we're calling Opposing Forces. There's been a number of names to call the economic environment we've experienced since the Great Recession. Bogged down by debt, increased taxes and regulation, economic growth was under 2% over the last 8 years and under the Obama administration. It was called the new normal. In 2016, we had an election. Trump is elected on a pro-growth strategy. Taxes were cut along with regulation. Economic growth is accelerating, averaging about 3%, could go higher. Q2 could see GDP growth up in the upper 3% range. However, unlike previous presidents, and I mentioned this when President Trump was elected, I said Trump's fiscal policies are coming into direct conflict with monetary policy. In fact, Trump is the first president since George H. Bush to have a Fed rate raising cycle occur in his presidency. Now, under George H. Bush, it occurred at the end of his presidency and resulted in the 1990 and 91 recession. But if you take a look at President Clinton, he did not have a rate raising cycle. It came at the very end, the last few months of his administration. Under George Bush, the Fed cut interest rates. Under Barack Obama, the Fed cut interest rates. Trump comes to office and the Fed is starting a rate raising cycle. Now, remember, up until Trump, the Fed was only raising interest rates one time a year. The Fed raised it under Yellen one time in 2015, another time in 2016. There's no way, John, without this fiscal stimulus, the Fed would be in any shape, or the economy for that matter, or markets, to be raising interest rates three or four times. I mean, if you take a look at corporate earnings that have come in the first and second quarter, yes, they're beating estimates. Yes, they're up over 20%. But one of the main reasons is the corporate tax rate was cut from 35 to 21. If you throw out the tax rate and throw out the increase in economic growth, there's no way you would see a Fed with economic growth under 2%, raising rates the way the Fed is doing now. So under Obama, the Fed under Yellen only raised interest rates one time a year, as I mentioned, in 2015 and 2016. Under Trump, as a result of accelerating economic growth, they moved to three times in 2017. And this year, it looks like three or possibly four. And the Fed dot plot is still projecting four possible rate hikes next year.
So you can actually see this tension going on here. On one hand, with tax cuts and other things going on, the fiscal stimulus is raising the GDP above 3%. At the very same time, the Fed is raising interest rates. And if history is any guide, when these two things collide, government policy versus Fed policy wins, and they're going to dump us into another recession.
You know, John, as Craig and I were talking in the first hour, this is the first time in my investment career that you actually have fiscal and monetary policy working against each other. And that's something I have not seen before. Sooner or later, rate hikes are going to start to bite, leading us into another recession. The Fed is embarking on, at least in my opinion, a very dangerous course. Because if you look at the economy, number one, is not overheating. Goodness sakes, we were at below 2% growth for 8 years. We are now finally hitting 3%, and they're acting like, you know, the economy is growing at 5 or 6%. So number one, the economy is not heating. Number two, for the first time, actual wages are finally rising. And that's a good thing. You know, if you're talking about the consumer making up 70% of the economy, well, when the consumer's wages go up, that gives them more purchasing power. And number three, inflation is still subdued. And despite the lowest unemployment rate, there is not serious inflation, despite the Fed's reliance on the J-curve theory. It just hasn't proven to be correct.
Is this why then the market is having difficulty gaining any traction despite, you know, rising profits and everything else that's going on?
Well, I mean, you do have rising trade tensions, but, you know, a lot of that is background noise. If you take a look at even the tariffs they're talking about throwing out, I think, what was the first pass, $34 billion? You know, we're dealing with an economy, global economy of $70 trillion. The U.S. economy is $20 trillion. So $34 billion is a gnat on an elephant. But it is the trade tensions, but I think more of the blame lays on the Fed for the latest shakeout in global stock markets. I mean, when the Fed is doing what it's doing, as Rob Bernard and I talked about the spread between yields here and overseas, what that's doing is creating a lot of tension and a lot of turmoil in the emerging markets, because a lot of the debt that was taken on over the last decade in emerging markets is dollar denominated. So as interest rates go up here, and as the dollar goes up, it means those loans are getting harder to pay back. But of the two, Fed policy could be the more important reason for spreading weakness in global stock prices. I mean, think about it. As the Fed raises rates, what have you seen? Mortgage rates are going up. Car loans are going up, along with credit card interest. Eventually, sooner or later, that's going to choke the economy. The problem with Fed policy is they're always reactive, which by definition means that they're prone to making policy mistakes. I mean, if you're always looking through the rearview mirror, well, you know what? You're not seeing what's coming in front of you. The Fed's view is that economic strength will be sustained and inflation will creep up. They've been saying that for about 5 or 6 years. So you still have $500 billion of fiscal policy that will be pumped into the economy, but it will increasingly be opposed by a continuous series of rate hikes. So it is one reason, at least in my opinion, the equity markets are having difficulty. Equity multiples are contracting. They're being squeezed as interest rates rise. PE multiples come down. One of the reasons that drove PE multiples up after the Great Recession was the drop in interest rates to the lowest point in history. So if the Fed is going to go ahead, and right now the futures market is banking on two possible rate hikes for the rest of the year, it could be ending up to be policy overkill. And here's another factor, too, and it just came out this week. The president's advisor made an announcement that the budget deficit next year is going to hit $1.1 trillion. And that's a combination of two things. Number one, the increased spending package that was agreed by both parties at the beginning of the year. But another factor is rising interest rates. The great thing during the Obama years, even though the deficit doubled, the interest rates came down. I think towards his last year in office, the overall interest rate on overall government debt was like a little over 2%. Well, take a look at what's happened. Treasury bills are over 1%. 2-year treasury notes are at 2.6. The 10-year is almost at 2.9. The 30-year is almost at 30. So everything the government is rolling over now is costing more money. And the interest expense is expected to hit almost $500 billion this year. And the budget deficit will hit 5.1% of GDP in 2017. Just to show you how high it's getting, we came in last year at roughly a little over $660 billion, which was about 3.4% of GDP. We're now hitting back to $1 trillion deficits, and we haven't even gone into a recession yet. Historically, if you look at 5% budget deficits, that only has happened twice in U.S. history, at least in the last 100 years. Once was in 1983, and again between 2009 and 2012. Now, the CBO is now projecting the interest on the debt will average 3% this year. Now, you think about that. For the last 8 years, at least under the previous administration, it averaged 2%. We're now at 3. They're projecting it'll rise to 3.2 next year. So unlike the previous 8 years, you had rising deficits and falling interest rates. You now have the opposite, rising budget deficits and rising interest rates. So if the Fed pushes the economy into recession, which is now highly likely, we could be talking about budget deficits at $1.5 to $2 trillion, depending on how severe the recession is. But if you're at $1 trillion in a growing economy, what happens when you go into recession? When government revenues come down and government expenditures go up.
So one could always hope, Jim, I would assume, that the Fed just might come to its senses and change course. I mean, given the fact that we have decelerating global growth and inflation would seem to be remaining weaker than expected. And if you move out of that, you look at oil prices as well, they're depressing it down. So maybe they'd slow it down.
You know, John, it is possible. I mean, you know, you take a look at what the Fed did in 2015 and 2016. They started out the beginning of the year. They said they were going to raise interest rates 3 times, 4 times. They only raised it once. But what was going on in 2015 and 2016? We had a lot of turbulence. China's economy was slowing down. Interest rates spread started to widen. And they wisely held back and said, you know what? We'll wait. They went on pause and waited to the end of the year. So the Fed has to realize that the yield curve is close to inverting. Emerging markets are now in turmoil and inflation remains low despite low unemployment. Now, oil prices are rising, but you know, when you think about it, what can the Fed really do about rising oil prices other than to kill the economy? They can't produce additional barrels of oil. So at least until the Fed reverses course, the dollar is likely to continue to rise, which will eventually hurt corporate earnings because a large portion of the S&P 500 and a lot of the Dow 30 stocks, they're all international companies. They get 40% or more of their sales overseas. So until such time that we see something like that, short-term bonds could probably hold up better than stocks outside, let's say, the FANG stocks, which are rising this week. But be prepared to change strategy on signs of economic weakness and weakening inflation.
Are you the only one who sees this, or do you think other people are seeing the same thing here?
We're not the only ones. In fact, it was interesting. Last week, Barron's did their mid-year roundtable with their roundtable experts. You take a look at Double Line's Jeffrey Gundlach. He believes we're getting closer to a recession. Perhaps it could be a year away. You know, he's bringing up something. It's not just the fact the Fed is raising interest rates. They're also contracting. They're going through quantitative tightening. At the same time, they're going to be reducing their balance sheet by $600 billion. That's $50 billion a month that's coming out of the market. One of the things he's talking about, and the Fed seems to, at least they don't want to acknowledge it publicly, is a flattening yield curve. I mean, we've gone from over 50, 60 basis points at the beginning of the year, we're down to a quarter. And if you're talking about two more rate hikes, we could be inverted by the end of the year. And anytime you see the yield curve invert, it kind of tells you somewhere down the road, it depends on what time period you're talking about, you could be in a recession. Sometimes it may take a year, sometimes less than a year, sometimes it takes more than a year. The other thing too is one of the roundtable experts, Abby Cohen from Goldman Sachs, she also sees tougher times in the year 2019, and they're looking at another 2 rate hikes coming this year.
And the question we ask at the end of every one of these sessions is, what should investors be doing given all of this information?
You know what? They ought to be doing about what some of the experts we've had on the program and do what we're doing. And that is, just as Gundlach is talking about, it's time to be more conservative and de-risk your portfolio. I mean, the easy money has been made. So as long as the Fed continues to raise interest rates, stocks are heading into major headwinds. And if rate hikes continue, a major financial storm. And it's probably going to erupt overseas, but that's not to say it does not hit our shores as well. You know, as we used to say, it's time to head closer to the exit door and have an exit plan.
You know, and it may be President Trump who sees that elections are coming up. And I'm not talking about the 2018 as much as I am the 2020 elections. And as a real estate guy, he does recognize what rising interest rates mean.
Well, you talk about a guy who made a fortune in real estate. He knows that rising rates can move markets and especially impact real estate. And he's sharp enough to know that eventually you raise interest rates, real estate prices go down, you're in a recession, real estate prices are become cheaper. He's talked about it. And he's made a lot of money by playing those cycles. So he knows about this. And that's probably why he started to tweet after this week's testimony.
And in the weeks to come, we're going to be following this. So what are we looking for?
You know, probably right now we're in the middle of corporate earnings season. I think that's going to be on the agenda. As we get into August, the next event there will be the August conclave of Federal Reserve officials. Probably get a clarification and probably a rubber stamp for the rate hike that's coming in September. At least right now, the futures market is saying over an 80% probability. And then, John, starting in September, we get into silly season. We will have a two-month period of time, September and October, before the midterm elections, which will be coming up in November. So things are likely to get dicey and crazy as, well, they've
silly
been crazy.
Season.
Yeah, silly season starts in full. As politicians say all kinds of wacky things to get elected again. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on the Financial Sense News Hour. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.